Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Well, as planned, it's Thursday.
It is. We were right on top of things, as we always are.
Oh, we scheduled it during the podcast last week, which is great. I think that's what everybody likes to hear, is us doing our planning in the podcast instead of outside it, because then they feel like they're part of the process, even though they don't have a voice, because we literally can't hear them. They are part of the process, nonetheless. So you have the MIT Mystery Hunt this weekend.
I do. This kicks off tomorrow around now, so our reason that we can't do it, as per usual. And it will take until about Sunday late afternoon for us. Sometimes it goes longer or goes shorter, but you know, we usually wrap up our participation in the Sunday afternoon time period.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty I was just prepping, getting all my systems in place,
I was going to ask, so you wrote about this a little bit, but you've got like a complicated system of stuff, and you've got like workflows that use the web and build Google Docs and put things in Slack and all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah, actually, we don't use Slack anymore. We're actually on Discord now because the automation is
better
for a lot of stuff. So we switched to that, and also because it's got the built-in video and audio chat stuff, we actually use that usually in the before pandemic times, we would get in together in a room on the MIT campus, and there'd be like 25 people in a room. Obviously, not such a great idea right now. So, but we still need the ability to talk to each other, and the fact that Discord makes it super easy to just be like, let's click a button and we've got like a video chat right here. It's great. It works really well. And they've come a long way in getting that system like really robust. We used it. We were doing sort of a practice session last weekend, solving some puzzles as part of a magazine that comes out every once in a while. And we tried it out for that, and we were using that stuff. And I'm impressed with how good Discord's video and audio stuff has gotten. It's really solid.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I hear. Discord is probably in all of our futures. I'll just say that. I feel like because Slack is a product that's made for something else, we have a Slack for members, and probably a lot of you listeners are in it, and it served us well, but at the same time, it's a product that is not made for us in any way, and its limitations are all because they want you to pay for the business edition. And let's just say that the economics of Six Colors memberships would not allow me. I would basically have to take all of your money and put it in Slack. That's almost as bad as Bitcoin.
I'm investing in Slack.
That's right. I'm just investing by paying the bill. I think Relay FM pays more money for Slack than it does for because Slack for its hosts than it does for hosting of podcasts.
Yeah, which is wild
business.
Wild.
So yeah, I wonder. Actually, sometimes. Well, I mean, I like Slack better than Discord. I was going to say, agree. I wonder why Relay keeps the Relay host Slack rather than putting everything in a host area in Discord. And then I answered my own question, which is because we actually like Slack better. But Discord is better for this stuff. Anyway, you wrote a piece. It is. It was in December on the 22nd. People can go find it because there are no show notes on this podcast. It's called Mystery Machine Automating Puzzle Hunting, and you have all your details there. And oh yeah, look at that. It's Discord.
Discord. And so I mean, Integromat, which is a service I've written about before, which is actually a really great. It's one of those web services. It's all about like connecting different web services together. IFTTT or Zapier, for example. But I actually love Integromat's just the way it deals with its work, its interface and everything. I think it's way easier to use and it's super powerful. So I've been using that for this and some other stuff, testing it out. And it is incredible what you can do with it. It's really simplified. I'm trying to, and I constantly iterate on this stuff. So I'm trying to make it easier right now. After I run through this year's, I will like work on some additions to make it more portable. Cause like right now I have to change stuff every year for things that change, and I'm trying to figure out like, can I simplify that and make it much easier for me to just change things once and then and then be done with it. So yeah,
I was just dealing with that with a different project because you and I have been noodling with shortcuts this week. We had a great moment that happened yesterday, which I really loved, which is so I did my podcast noting script that I wrote about, and you thought I could do this in shortcuts, and you did it in shortcuts. But what was interesting is that you had to, in order to do date forming, you went out to Python. like a one-liner or three-liner Python script. And I said the advantage of having not gone out to Python is that it'll run everywhere because not everybody has Python and not everybody has all the Python things. Although it turns out, I think everybody in macOS still has Python 2.7 or something like that, but it's deprecated. It's going to go away at some point. Apple kind of, it's a pain, right? Because Apple wants to not support these scripting languages, but it means that if you write a fun script that does something, you have to walk somebody. This actually happened to me. I was trying to give a Keyboard Maestro macro for Stream Deck to Mike Hurley, and he doesn't have Python 3 installed. I'm like, okay, well, or he didn't have PHP installed, and I wrote that new version of that script in Python, and I gave it to him, and he's like, no, but it still doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, right. Well, first, does it run in Python 2? It does. I said, okay, well, then here, take this version. He said, oh, it doesn't work because it doesn't have some of the Python modules. So I then had to tell him how to install the Python module manager pip and then install them. Mm-hmm. And he found a page and it got it to work. But it's like, it's such a pain. So I saw your shortcut. And even though yours doesn't use modules or anything like that, I said, what if we did this? I think we can do this all in shortcuts. So I came up with a way to do it that uses a bunch of math. And then you came up with a way that uses less math, or I mean, more complicated math.
Fewer steps. Yeah.
And you posted that. And then we got from three or four people other solutions to the problem. It was really like we had done a word problem in math class. It was amazing.
Yeah, and there were some brilliant ones in there that I would never have thought of.
Never!
Like, yeah, it just never occurred to me. Somebody did a really clever one where they did like all the math in one line and then like grepped out the parts that they needed.
I wanted to say, the one that impressed me the most, even though he didn't win because there was a previous solution, because I ended up doing this in sort of name that tune fashion, which one gets the shortcut down to the fewest steps. Mm-hmm. And this one is amazing, but it came in after another one that already had the same number of steps. It was by Andrew Kerr, and it's incredible because he has a single calculate expression action in shortcuts that takes the number of seconds, because this is, remember to get a time code for your podcast. So it's a number of seconds since the podcast recording started. And he did this one expression that is floor, which is fun because that is round it down.
Round down, yep.
Floor, in parentheses, number / 3600 plus floor, in parentheses, number percentage 3600, which is modulo. The remainder after you divide by 3600, divided by 60, divided by 100, plus number percentage 3600 percentage 60. So what is that? What's that math term? Is that?
It's modulo.
Modulo. Times 10,000. Basically, what he does is he formats it so that the end result is a number. But the number is the hours in the ones place, the minutes in the tenths and hundredths place, and the seconds in the thousandths and ten thousandths place.
10,000th, yeah, yeah.
And then he greps it. So then he says, "Well, take that first digit and then put a colon after it, and take the second two digits and put a colon after that, and then you've got a number." It's amazing, and it would have been the winner. But somebody else suggested that was it Kevin Van Haren suggested that you actually,
yeah,
there were two, Kevin was one and then there was somebody else. Kevin Van Haren suggested that you calculate out the difference between the start of the day that you're on and you take the, what was it?
Yeah, it was like the start of. I was in fact. I think it was the start of the day.
No, is you take the difference between file creation and the current time, and then because the problem is not finding that it's outputting it in a pretty way. So you take
format,
that.
Yeah,
you take that
format.
Difference in seconds, and then you add that seconds to the number of seconds to the beginning of the day. And so if you've been recording for an hour, if you add an hour to the beginning of the day, what you get is today at 1 a.m., which is not what you want, and yet it kind of is. Because if you format that as hours, minutes, seconds, it's 01:00:00, and it's right.
Exactly.
And then somebody else wrote in and said, you don't even need to do that. Because there's some other, I don't even remember what his approach was.
I think it was Antonio Bueno who I, yeah. I knew a little bit from the, he was in Matt Casanelli's Shortcuts community too.
Oh, right. He wrote a couple of really cool Shortcuts and helped me with stuff
really,
too.
He writes really great complex stuff. But I think he did the same thing, but essentially he was using like Unix time codes essentially.
Yeah. So
he was adding the seconds to the beginning of the Unix epoch.
Which if you enter in time in a parsed format in Shortcuts, it'll just actually, as you enter it in, it shows you how it's parsing it. So his trick was get the time between the creation date and now in seconds, and then add the seconds to 1970 01 01 00 00 00, which is the beginning of the Unix era, and at that point you've got the time. You've got
starts from zero, basically.
You've got that same time that you can then parse as hours, minutes, seconds. It's bananas. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. That was a fun little thing to see everybody
collaborative Shortcut development, which I think is entertaining. I mean, it's got an entertainment value to it. I think there's also something to the, it points out that Apple does a terrible job of documenting Shortcuts because figuring out what you can do.
You found a Reddit page that has some of the rules of what things you can put into the calculation action, which there should absolutely be. I was thinking about it. There actually should be. So you can get info on every action in Shortcuts.
But it doesn't tell you very much.
And that's like, it's there so needs annoying. To be a link in the get info of every Apple supplied Shortcut action to a page detailing what you can do with that action. And it's a documentation thing, and I know that the Shortcuts team isn't very big, but Apple is big, and somebody should be documenting all this stuff, and it should be in the interface, because we shouldn't have to go to a Reddit page for that. I think it also suggests something larger about Shortcuts, which is it shouldn't be this hard to do time formatting like this, because this was, I'll point out again, essentially a one-liner in Python.
Right, because they've just got a function that basically says, let me give you a string, and you can format it. Like a number and format it as a time.
Because the problem wasn't that we didn't know the offset. The problem was the offset wasn't formatted nicely, right? We knew exactly what the offset was, the number of seconds, or you could even get it, you know, using some simple math into hours, minutes, seconds. But even then, it doesn't have two digits for the minutes. And like, you just need to say, make this pretty. And Shortcuts is like, no.
Yeah, it was fun. It was wild because I even found at one point there's a measure framework because on iOS there's a measure app, right? And so the measure action, there's a couple, but one is like convert, and it has duration, but you can only turn like seconds into minutes or minutes into seconds or seconds into hours, right? Like you can't turn it into like an actual formatted string. And it's like, well, this should solve my problem if you just let me put in like, it's realize its duration, format it like using date codes, essentially, that would have solved all my problems. But nope, there's no way to do that. So yeah, I agree with you. The documentation, and I think, you know, speaking as someone who's done a lot of PHP in the past and dabbled a little bit more recently in stuff like Python, those languages are exceptionally well documented. PHP in particular, you go to php.net and you search for any function, and it's got basically everything about how to use a function. And like, that is, most programmers, I would say, and I think most would agree with me, are self-taught. And the way you learn to do things is searching around and trying to figure out, has anybody done this before? And B, like, what tools did they use? And then C, I'm going to look up those tools in a reference guide and then figure out how I can apply it to my like personal situation.
Yeah, so there's a Shortcuts user guide on Apple's website.
Yep.
Part of the problem, by the way, is Apple's insistence on using really generic terms for their apps, because to just even find Google Shortcuts things is hard. You basically have to do Apple Shortcuts, but it's not called Apple Shortcuts, and that will not always get you what you want, but it's more likely to do it. Apple Shortcuts user guide, if you search for calculation, it just doesn't have anything. So, again, this is one of those things where it needs to be on the web, but it also needs to be in the app, because this is a thing that you're doing this in the app. And if you want people to learn, one of the ways is to provide documentation. When I was a kid, I learned BASIC. That was the programming language on the computers at the time. And I got a book. And I think it was when I had the Commodore PET, the first computer I ever had. And it was the Commodore Basic Reference Guide. Mm-hmm. And it was the first computer book I really had ever gotten. But it had every command that was available in Commodore Basic. And I read that thing cover to cover, and I learned every single command. And I know everybody's learning process is different, but I would say it was the equivalent in that era of Googling for things now. We're like, how do you do this? And you'd look it up. And like, Shortcuts is an environment. It's not like a lot of these coding environments where like it could be in any text editor or any command line interface or whatever. It's like if you're doing Shortcuts, you're in Shortcuts. So putting references in Shortcuts seems like a natural place to do it. And the fact that there's a get info box on all those actions, and yet they're inscrutable and they don't tell you what to do, that's the problem. So that's something for them to
work on. Always check to see if there's like, all right, explain to me how this action works. And it's like, well, you know, you can put stuff in here and it gives you this. And it's like, really? That's it. That's all you got for me?
Yeah, the calculate is such a complicated, powerful thing. Calculate expression, and when you click on the info, it says evaluates the mathematical expression in a given input string and outputs the result as a number.
It's like, any math expression ever?
You might as well just say does math. Okay,
does math
doesn't help.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Shortcuts is a remarkably powerful tool. And it does amaze me constantly how many features are kind of just not obvious. Like I noticed somebody in our Slack asked, like when we had just after we posted this, like, oh, I noticed you named your variables. Like, right. I didn't know you could do that. It's like, yeah, you can. It's not obvious.
Yeah.
Like it's there, but it is not. You got to sort of poke around a little bit until you figure out how to do it.
A huge amount of the secret to being good with Shortcuts is exactly what you would call not discoverable, because what you discover is eventually, if somebody tells you, is if you click on those little chips, those little icon blob button things in Shortcuts, individual ones, they're variables or magic variables or whatever, when you click on them, a pop-up comes up and it has a bunch of things, including the ability to give it a name. Because one of the breakthroughs that they had with Shortcuts is the magic variables idea. The idea that you used to have to set variables for everything. And now every step of the process, every output from every action is just accessible. It is a variable. You can grab it at any point. It's great. A great, great move.
Useful.
And then you can name them. So you can say, you know, the output or the JSON file.
Right.
So
you don't have like eight different pieces of text and they're all just called text. You know?
Exactly, because it's terrible. So you can do that. But also all of the kind of like, it's a combination of like formatting, but also like
metadata.
Because every action from Shortcuts, not every action, many actions from Shortcuts, what they give you back, like a Safari web page, and this doesn't really work on Mac OS, but it works on iOS. When you get a Safari web page back, what do you get back? What is a web page? And the answer is if you click on that output from get a Safari web page, you've got choices. You're like, what do you want? It's like, do you want the URL? Do you want the name? Do you want the content? Do you want the selection? You know, like all of those pieces are there, and that pop-up floating box is basically where you choose, like, well, I want the name of the web page. You don't say, there's no action for like get Safari web page name and get Safari web page title. They've rolled it all together, but you have to know about it. And that happens a lot where it's like, I want this as text, or I want this number, or I want this string. I want the, you know, you can say like, I want the just the URL as a URL. That's all I want. And also sometimes, like with dates, as we found out, you can also say, I want this as a date. And it says, what format would you want the date? And it's got all of these like presets. And then there's also custom, which point you can say HHMMSS, and it will actually do that.
Yeah. And you can even format like with colon. You can put in like other items in there. Yeah, it's great. And I mean, there's also, so like a lot of programming languages have this concept of like typing too, right? Where it's like, what type of variable is this? Is it a number? Is it text, you know, a string? Is it an object, etc.? And there's even a bit of that in this, where there's like a drop down menu for a lot of these, where you can tell it like, what type is this? And it's, that can be useful at times, because there's times where, like, for example, well, it's passing this as text, but I need it as a number, even though you think, well, a number is text, isn't it? And like some cases that makes a difference, in some cases it doesn't, but it is handy. And there's like a lot of power in terms of how you access these things and how you sort of cast these variables as you get them. It's just hidden and hard to find. So, yeah, I think, I mean, and there are, I think, again, you know, I mentioned Matthew Castanelli, who has obviously done a lot of work on Shortcuts. He has a whole community set up for this, and it's I've dipped in there in the past, and they've been really, like, I think they're doing a lot of sort of the yeoman's work of, like, trying to get all this stuff and figure out how it works and provide information for other people who are interested in learning more. So that's a great resource for a lot of this stuff, too. But it's also incumbent then upon third parties who add Shortcut support for their apps to do a similarly good documentation job of telling us, oh, yeah, you gave me this action that I can use to do something in your app, but you need to explain to me how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Shortcuts. I think what my big frustration with it is, and this has been when it was on iOS, before it was on macOS, it's this feeling where people say to me, I tried to do it and I couldn't do something. And it's so frustrating to me because I used to say that myself about Automator, and the answer was because you couldn't do it. Yeah. Shortcuts isn't like that. Shortcuts, it learned all those lessons from Automator. You can do so much in Shortcuts. But you got to figure out, you got to think like Shortcuts. You got to crack a couple of the codes. And I think that's one of the new frontiers for Apple in terms of where they take Shortcuts is they need to do. Honestly, if you look at something like Swift Playgrounds, they have done such a good job with educational content for how to program in Swift. And I've seen it in other apps. There's an app called Tinkerstellar that is sort of for all sorts of different coding, but they have a Python guide very much like the Swift or like the Swift Playground stuff, except it's for Python. Apple needs to do that for Shortcuts, right? Like the Shortcuts gallery is not that different than it was back in the day. I feel like they need some more handholding and guiding of Shortcuts because the power is there, but most people don't seem to get over that hump.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the thing is like those people who are interested and already know kind of a bit about programming are willing to put in the time and effort to sort of figure out how stuff works. Whereas some people, this could be useful for a lot more people, but the friendliness, the user friendliness of it is just not there to get those people over that initial hump of like, yeah, but like, what do I want to do with this, right? Like, how does this work? Like, this seems too complicated. So I think it's a great tool, and they just haven't broadened the appeal of it, basically, by helping people get a little more comfortable in doing it. And especially compared to something like Swift Playgrounds. I mean, Swift is so much more complex than Shortcuts, right? Like, most people are not going to sit down and learn Swift. But most people might learn how to make a few Shortcuts if you sort of walk them through it. And I don't think, right. I agree with you. I don't think they do a good job of that right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Shortcuts a lot. There's a lot you can do with it. I think that you've proven, and like this week was a great example, and you did this once before, where it's like, I built a thing in some scripting language, and you're like, can I do that in Shortcuts? And the answer is yes. And it is even that, just being on the Mac, where it used to be like, well, I want to do this thing. How do I do it? And you're like, well, Automator can't really do it, so you have to do AppleScript. It's like, oh, well, forget it. Goodbye. And now Apple has handed you Shortcuts. And although it's got lots of issues, the fact is a lot of this stuff where it used to be, well, you need to write a script to do this, you can do what you did this week and say, could I just do that as a shortcut? And the answer is, yeah, you probably can. And that's the potential there, right? Is Shortcuts are never going to be for regular, you know, completely regular users, right? Although it does have the advantage of being on every system, unlike the latest version of the, you know, Python or PHP or something like that. It's on every Mac, so you could hand somebody a shortcut and they could use it. But there is this other class of users that is pretty technical, but is not like, you know, you look at like, oh, Jason did an Apple script, and you're like, I don't want to do that. But Shortcuts,
I don't even understand it most of the time.
No, and trust me, Dan, nobody understands AppleScript except Sal. but you use it, but you don't understand it unless you talk to Sal. And then it makes sense. And then you leave Sal, and then it doesn't make sense anymore. It's amazing. Yeah. You just got to be around that guy. I love Sal. He's great. Who y'all know. That's a reference. Because Steve Jobs didn't want to pronounce Segoian. So he said, hey, it's Sal. He said it's Saul, who y'all know, because it rhymes and it's not his name at all. Anyway, but shortcuts you can look at and be like, oh, I think I can figure this out, right? Like it's just that, and that's the power and potential of shortcuts, is that it opens up all of this stuff with stock software on the Mac that everybody has access to, that is way more accessible than something like writing an Apple Script script.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think there's also something to be said for just the idea that there's stuff that's good, that it's really good at. Like when you mentioned this script, I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't know. I mean, it seems like shortcuts can probably do all those things, because I've definitely run into automations before where we've thought about it and it's like, oh yeah, that's, shortcuts probably can't handle that, right? Like something needs to happen, and it's like, I don't think they've got that. But this seems like a case where it's like, well, this is pretty straightforward, and mainly what it's doing is interacting with files, and it should be good at that, right? Because it's on the Mac and files are a big part of that. There are definitely other places where I'm constantly surprised, and we've talked about this too, where it's like Apple hasn't built support for its own features into it. I know you were mentioning stuff, I think maybe for notes or whatever, but like for me, it was tab groups. There's like,
oh, yeah.
Shortcuts doesn't know what a tab group is. And you're like, come on, guys, you spent all this time talking about how great tab groups are, and I can't even make a shortcut to open a tab group?
That's the one. I can't believe we've gone this far with shortcuts and haven't mentioned Federico Vaticci, but it is one of the things that drives him batty about this, is that, and it has a familiar ring to me, because back in the heyday of AppleScript, that was one of the things people always said, is why aren't Apple's apps more scriptable? Why isn't Apple prioritizing this? And sometimes they would, and sometimes they wouldn't, and it varied by group. But right now, that version of the argument that Federico makes now is, why you have to change the culture at Apple. Apple stuff needs to support shortcuts. If you have a hot new feature that comes out, part of the hot new feature should be shortcut support for it, like tab groups. Or the really painful one is like rich text and other stuff in notes, which was added several years ago, but it was added after the initial shortcuts implementation of notes support on iOS, and it's never been updated. It's just one, come on, guys. Like, that's the beauty of, you know, you talk about your ecosystem and having everything work together. The beauty of it is you build shortcuts, you have your notes app, and they work together, and they build something larger out of the sum of those parts. But to do that, you actually need to say, hey, isn't tab groups great? And you can automate it. And they just didn't do it. Yeah. I mean, granted, it was a bad summer for the Safari team, but like that needs to be...
Sure.
And I don't even know who builds that. I think that the app team needs to build it, but I don't know. But like whether
that's the other question, right? Going into this is like, well,
you build it.
We've had shortcuts for a couple of years now on the Mac. Four months. Jason, it's all blends together.
I know. Well, once you use betas, I had somebody was asking me about something. I said, that's an iOS. It was our friend Phil Michaels. He was like, can you do this in iOS? I'm like, yeah, that was an iOS 15 thing. Or was it 14? I can't tell. Because once you start using the betas in June, by now, I've used it so long that, like, was that in the current version? The answer was yeah. That was actually a new feature of iOS 15. So, like shortcuts.
I'll retract my, we've had shortcuts for a few months now.
And I think. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Good time, knowledge of time there, Dan. Good job.
Yeah, thank you. And I formatted that time.
HHMMSS.
Yeah, that's right. The what's interesting to see is how they progress on it, right? Like, there have definitely been improvements to iOS shortcuts over the years since they introduced that. And so I'm curious to see, as you point out, like, well, are they going to go back and backfill some of this stuff, right? Like, are they going to next year, when they're introducing all the new features, right, that are coming in iOS 16 and macOS 16 or 13? Jesus, I can't remember. Whatever the next version of macOS and iOS are. And maybe they're caught up now, like, great, okay, we can put shortcuts for this new stuff we're introducing into the new version. But are they going to go back and be like, oh, yes, also, and we need to add tab groups and all this other support from like last year, all that stuff we didn't do? And I think that's the question, because it shows the commitment level of Apple when it comes to shortcuts. It's like, it's not a job that ever finishes, right? This is just a product that you need to keep updating if you want to keep it useful and relevant. You need to keep adding all these new features that you're building in, need to be shortcut accessible in order for this to be a thing that people are going to keep using.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's got a lot of potential. So I'm just, I think the reason we talk about this a lot now is like, it just came to the Mac. It needs some work. It's got a lot of potential. And we are at that point. We're like on the precipice where some Apple stuff never gets past this point. They do enough to get it out there, and then they walk away. It doesn't it isn't a focus and they walk away. I don't think that's going to happen with shortcuts, but I just want to keep talking about it because, like, not only is the potential for people like our listeners, like, great, like, it's really good. If you haven't explored it yet, give it a try. Read some of the stuff Federico has written. Read the stuff that Matt Casinelli has written. Like, there's a lot of good stuff out there to help you learn it. I think Apple doesn't need to do more, but there's a lot of good stuff. I think David Sparks is working on a shortcuts field guide that's going to come out at some point here too. I think he's waiting for like it to settle down on the Mac because it's kind of a mess, but like there are lots of options out there and I do recommend that people try it, but I also want Apple to keep its eye on the ball a little bit and get and prioritize it enough to make it clear. Like culturally, it needs to be clear that if you're doing a new feature, it needs to support shortcuts, right? Like it just needs to. You need like, well, oh, we're adding this feature. How are we going to add shortcut support to that? And whether that's the team that's working on Safari or it's the team that's working on shortcuts or it's some combination thereof, there needs to be a cultural thing inside Apple to say, when we do a new thing, it all shortcut support comes with. Like it has to come with. Or why are we doing this? We'll see what they do.
We'll see.
Well, have a good time solving puzzles. It sounds like a great time. So MIT Mystery Hunt, it used to be more because of you know pandemic and all that. It used to be more like you ran. I always got the impression that it was a little bit puzzle solving and a little bit like running around Cambridge looking for things. Is that true?
Yeah, well, there are elements, and every year differs because every year is run by a different team. It's whoever won the last year's hunt puts on the next hunt. So every year has a little bit different. And there are definitely puzzles that require more interaction. There used to be a series of puzzles that would always be events where you would go someplace, usually on campus, and then you would interact with people from other teams and collaboratively work with like a couple people from another team to do puzzle solving, which was always interesting. And then some things that were more like scavenger hunt aspects, like, oh, you might need to go... what we call runarounds, where you might need to go do something on campus in order to solve a puzzle, finding things that are in the environment. And then every once in a while, there have been puzzles that take you a bit farther afield. There was one year where we had some sort of like a photo scavenger hunt, basically, and had to take pictures of different landmarks throughout Cambridge. So like a handful of us were driving around and like hopping out and taking pictures at buildings and stuff. But a lot of it is done. The bulk of it is done like in a room looking at like spreadsheets or I mean, there's occasionally ones that require building things or like crafts or something like that. Or yeah, it kind of runs the gamut. There's like a ton of different stuff, which is what I think makes it so entertaining is there's always something a little bit different and every year there's different production values put into it. There's a plot and like characters and a theme that sort of goes along with like a story that goes along with it. And those can be quite entertaining as well. Last year there was literally a whole like they built like an MMO. It was like a pixel art MMO and it was bananas. It was amazing. And it's just like, I mean, just great for something that all had to be remote for the first time, really, basically ever, that you had that sort of virtual world that you could jump into. So I'm very curious to see what this year's look like.
Yeah. Well, that's I was asking mostly because I keep thinking, I wish that they did something like this out here, or two, maybe I should just offer my services to somebody as a remote puzzler because it sounds like a lot of fun, but I'm not in Boston, so it's harder. Yeah. I'd imagine a lot of the teams have virtual components where it's people who've moved away or whatever, and they're the brains in the jars that are working on the stuff that can be handled, can be outsourced to the rest of the world instead of being done. Right.
Well, if I've got some baseball questions, I'll give you a call.
Oh yeah, I'm around. Just ask. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening. And yes, we know it's Thursday. But next Friday, barring anything, we'll be back on our regular schedule, and Dan can regale us with tales of the mystery hunt or not.
I'll be very tired, probably.
Probably so. Even on Friday. Wow.
Yeah, you know, those things really takes it out of you, man.
Don't look for any new posts from Dan next week, I guess. And thanks for listening. And Dan. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.